Yeah, okay, I guess I'll start out with the obligatory but nevertheless sincere thank you to the organizers for putting together this It From Qubit last hurrah. Goes without saying that I'm having a lovely time. And I guess also thank you for the audience to showing up and continuing with this measurements morning. Today we're gonna keep going on this thread that Alexei started and talk about measuring wormholes and imagining for a second that as theorists, we were given actual access to an experimental lab. This is, I imagine it looks something like this. You got a bunch of wires attached to analog readouts and something like order 10 to the number qubits is sufficient to get an emergent holographic wormhole, I think. That sounds about right, right? Okay, well, whether or not this picture is actually accurate, hopefully the cartoon is useful. And in that vein, so there's this It From Qubit slogan that we'll hear about, we have heard about and we'll continue to hear about, which again, may not be precisely correct in its exact details, but is nevertheless useful, which is that space-time is a hologram that we think of as emerging from the entanglement structure of some underlying degrees of freedom. And a natural question that comes out of that is, well, what if I had access to this underlying system? How would manipulations or destruction of this underlying entanglement modify or destroy features of the bulk geometry or modify features of the bulk to boundary map and how exactly this hologram is encoded in the underlying system. From entanglement wedge reconstruction, you might imagine that if you have access to some boundary system, measurements in that system might allow you to reconstruct operators up to the entanglement wedge. But from this quantum error correction picture, you might expect that to get things deep and up to the entanglement wedge, you need more correlated measurements spread over that region. Today, just to have control, we're actually going to focus on the opposite limit, which is the effects of local projective measurements and post-selection in particular done on the boundary system. So, okay, just as a brief overview, we'll study local projective measurements focusing on wormholes still. So, focusing on local projective measurements in the thermal field double state, and we'll try and get a handle on how this modifies both connectivity by seeing how and when we can destroy the Einstein-Rosen bridge, and also how we mix up information in the bulk to boundary map by analyzing how we'll teleport information from the entanglement wedge of one CFT to the other. Okay, so just the rough plan is to explain these local projective measurements in holography. For the thermal field double setup in particular, how we get these via a path integral description, and then the conformal map tricks that we use to understand the bulk saddles a little bit via some auxiliary geometry. And then I'll flash two main results, one connecting this bulk connectivity, destruction of the Einstein-Rosen bridge with the mutual information phase transition in the boundary, and then try and get a handle on this bulk teleportation question via Hebri operator insertion. And hopefully I'll leave lots of time for some future direction musings before a quick summary. Okay. So just to put this in a moment of context before I continue, so there has been a few related works from the extended Swingle family on this topic. The first one, okay, I would love to go through all of these names, but it's this 25-minute talk and I don't have the luxury of time to name all of them. But let's call them Swingle subgroup one. Study this question of holographic measurements in vacuum ADS, in particular looking at two opposite subregions and studying the question of when you get an entangled bulk versus when the resulting bulk disconnects, and also studied related tensor network questions just try and get a handle on what exactly these boundary projections mean from that toy model. There's also related questions, related work from this second Swingle subgroup looking at this in the thermal field double case, but in lower dimensions. So for various reasons, trying to generalize these quark Lumaldo Sanda microstates and try and get a handle on operator reconstruction behind the horizon, this generalization to the thermal field double is of course very interesting and useful, and here we studied models in the lower dimension picture where we have good access to the SYK side and the JT gravity side, and also wrote down an explicit surface circuit connecting this to a quantum teleportation picture. Today, though, I'm not going to talk about either of those two things. I'm going to talk about this third work, which is doing a higher dimensional version, but also of this thermofield double state. Okay. Good. So what are these local projective measurements? Well, okay, let's start with a warm-up in the full CFT. They're a bit of a mess. But for a second, let's pretend I had some tensor network or lattice regularization. Then what these local projective measurements are just projections onto local product states on each of the different sites. And I, of course, have a bunch of choices associated to this. So I can choose different bases, for instance, maybe X on all of them. And in the post-selection, I can also choose the state that I'm selecting. So maybe up, up, up. Or I can choose different bases, X, Y, Z, and also the different state I'm post-selecting there. The analog of this in a CFT is going to be just a UV local measurement with zero spatial entanglement in the region I'm projecting on. And this will correspond to choice of a different Cardy state that I'm projecting on. And I can prepare this in a path integral by just starting with the Euclidean path integral and inserting a slit with conformal boundary conditions in the region that I want to post-select on. And this will correspond to a BCFT. Okay. Eventually, I want to understand the bulk dual. And the way that I'll do this is via the ADS-BCFT correspondence. Because this measurement that I'm doing also inserts a lot of energy, I'm disentangling things at a UV scale over some finite region. The dual will also insert a lot of energy. But for now, let's just put a pin in that. In general, I expect the dual to be given by some end of the world bearing in the bulk. So I'll have some boundary in the bulk as well that will have some Neumann boundary conditions on. And this will correspond to a dynamical end of the world brain with constant tension. And this tension will be related to this choice of boundary state that I projected on, this Cardy state. Okay. So as I said, I can't just easily use ADS-BCFT because I'm also inserting a lot of energy. So the trick that we'll use to understand our bulk geometry is to first, and because I'm in three bulk dimensions, two boundary dimensions, I can use lots of tricks that I have for conformal maps in two dimensions to map this to a different spacetime that I know the bulk dual of. And this won't help me answer every question about the geometry, but if I'm interested just in entanglement or bulk connectivity, this will help me get a handle on that. So what we'll do is we'll start with the Euclidean path integral for a thermofield double state. Our measurement will insert these slits, and in particular, for right now, I'll focus on there's the Euclidean time, the x-coordinate. I'll measure infinite regions and just leave some finite region unprojected on the left side. And then I can use a lot of series of conformal maps that are very ugly, but you can find the details in the paper, to map to this finite cylinder where these slits get mapped to the boundary, and the claim is that I know the dual of this. So what is the dual? This boundary cylinder can be filled in two ways, either with a portion of thermal ADS or a portion of BTZ, both cut off by these end-of-the-world brains. Okay, so I have this bit trick. Both the trajectory of this brain and which phase I'm in will be determined just from the Euclidean action, the usual one. Okay. Some important features. So one thing to note is that in this auxiliary space-time that I've mapped to, the brain in the tension equals zero case will sit on the t equals zero slice on the RT surface. As you increase the tension, the brain will bulge out and create more geometry. And as you decrease the tension, it will bulge inward and cut off more geometry. And then the other thing to note is that this phase diagram to determine which phase I'm in is controlled by two things, the tension and this parameter S that's a function of this delta L, the size of my unmeasured region, and temperature. This is kind of an ugly parameter, but there's two limits. So as the size of my measured region that I'm leaving becomes quite small, so if I measure a lot, I tend to want to disconnect the geometry. So I'm in this BTZ phase, and the T equals zero slice now corresponds to this line here, and the tau equals beta over 2 line, this other line. So I get two separate portions for my t equals 0 geometry, and I'm disconnected. In the thermal radius phase, though, these two lines are connected through the bulk. So as I measure more, I disconnect my geometry, and as I measure more, I disconnect my geometry, and I measure less in this phase, my geometry stays connected. Hopefully that's clear. I'm looking to the audience to see if they have questions, but they've been silenced because they don't have access to the cubes, but okay. All right, hopefully that's clear, but you can't tell me if not. Okay. So the first result that we can do is verify that this bulk connectivity is related to entanglement. So you can call this a measurement-induced Hawking page transition between this connected and disconnected bulk. And just quickly, you can verify this via the RT formula. So in this BTZ phase, I said we had a disconnected tau equals zero slice, which means that my RT surface for, say, the left side will just be the empty set. So the entanglement entropy of either side, and thus the mutual information between the two remaining CFTs, is then zero after measurement. In the other phase, this thermal ADS phase, I mean, you can just calculate, there's going to be a non-zero RT surface given by, again, some formula that depends on the measurement parameter and the tension. And then you can go back and verify this, if you'd like, by a CFT replica trick calculation and match it on in various limits to previous work done for BCFTs. Okay. The second main result, then, is to talk about bulk teleportation. So as I said before, the second question you might want to ask is how bulk information gets encoded in the CFT and how that is shifted around and modified after measurement. So in particular, previous work by this first Swingle subset showed that portions of the bulk previously encoded in very large regions of the CFT, so let's say some circle in the center, after measurement can become encoded in very small subregions of the boundary that can be made arbitrarily small. So it seems like you can teleport very large portions of the bulk into very small subregions on the boundary. As long as you tune the tension so that you're in the right phase. And similar behavior was found in this SYK example. You can find you measure a large subset of your boundary and you can get the entanglement wedge to jump and still contain the entanglement wedge of the remaining CFT to jump and still contain most of the bulk. Here, we're going to ask a slightly more refined question, so not just whether the complement of the measured region contains most of the bulk, but try and keep track of whether that remains in the left CFT or in the right CFT after measurement. So to do that, we're going to study this heavy operator insertion. So in particular, we'll just insert some scalar field in the path interval with mass that's heavy enough to use a geodesic approximation, but not so heavy that we have to include back reaction. And then just determine where this geodesic hits the time reflection symmetric slice. If it hits on the left side, we'll say it's contained in the entanglement wedge of the left. If it hits on the right side, we'll say it's contained in the entanglement wedge of the right. Now that we have these brains, though, there's a third option, which is that this geodesic that's telling me about this correlator might end on the boundary, might end on the brain, in which case we'll see that information is destroyed. Okay, so again, the chain of logic here is we'll insert an operator, map that to this finite cylinder, fill in the bulk, use the geodesic approximation, and see where it ends, and therefore know which entanglement wedge it's in. Okay, so then here's the results. I have actual numerical plots sketched in coordinates you probably don't understand. So here's a cartoon. In the BTZ phase, where I have these disconnected, so the brain disconnects these two boundary regions, you can see that, well, for a large portion of my parameter space, information that these just geodesics hit the brain and the information is erased. And a much smaller portion is teleported. Whereas in the thermal ADS phase, you can actually get a large degree of teleportation. The other thing to note is that as I tune the tension up, as expected, the amount of teleported information increases. Okay. Okay. So I think I went quite quickly through that, but let's plenty of time to muse on open questions. So one thing you might wonder about is, as I said, I alluded to in the introduction, measuring a full boundary region on the left gives you these analogs of these Korpilu-Maldacena microstates. So by doing these measurements, you might ask about whether this can help tell us and elucidate complexity of reconstruction behind the horizon. So in particular, Korpilu-Maldacena told us that this reconstruction behind the horizon can be done simply if we know the measurement outcome, just by evolving with a Hamiltonian modified by the addition of some term that depends on the measurement. Okay, now that might be a little bit confusing because we also expect that in some of, if I measure a full boundary region, well, I'll be left with a pure state on the other side. So I'll have an empty set as my RT surface, a non-minimal QAS as the horizon, and then some end of the world brain, a surface that sits right at the end of the world brain, might be viewed as a Python's lunch. So this might tell me that I expect operator reconstruction in this region to be very complex, and yet I also know from this Korpilu-Maldacena picture that I can get information out fairly easy just by evolution by this modified Hamiltonian. All right, so that's an open question, although I'll also say that this post-selection in and of itself might be very complex to do. Okay. Of course, as we heard from Alexei, an additional very important question is to understand dynamics of this. So in the setup that I talked about, we were really just doing a single measurement on the t equals zero slice. But what we don't have a good framework for is either understanding the time evolution of this state or of even doing a measurements not on the t equals zero slice. So what happens and how we end up getting a measurement-induced phase transition picture is a big open question, and maybe you expect that as your time evolve, you regain correlations in the UV first, and so therefore regain some bulk in the UV near the boundary, and it eventually disappears, the brain eventually disappears, but how this actually comes about, I think is still a big open question. Oh, okay, and then a lot of this picture, so if we want to understand this better, of course, we actually have to understand the Lorentzian geometry. So I just, through this series of conformal mappings, defined this auxiliary geometry that help us understood bulk connectivity and entanglement, but it actually doesn't help us understand the Lorentzian geometry in the original picture, which, as I said, is somewhat singular and divergent because we've done this very UV-sensitive measurement. So understanding that, or understanding other forms of measurement is also a big open question. And in particular, we think we can make progress on weak measurements. And then, as I said, you might expect more non-local correlations to help you get deeper in the bulk and reconstruct operators further up to the entanglement wedge. So that would also be something interesting to look at. Okay, so let me just summarize quickly. So again, we studied local projective measurements in the CFT thermal double field, CFT thermofield double, and studied how that modified bulk connectivity and the bulk to boundary map, and in particular, clarified when we would destroy the Einstein-Rodin bridge and when we would teleport and destroy information via these projective measurements. Okay, and lots of open questions.
I see a questions over there.
So could you go back to the slide where you showed the sequence of conformal mappings?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't really.
Well, yeah, but sorry, the three-step figure that you had?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm a little confused about the second picture here, because what I understood from most of what you were saying was that you were doing spatial measurements
yes.
In the CFT.
Yes.
But the second picture here sort of looks like you're doing a measurement along the time that is used to prepare the thermofield double, rather than along the spatial section of the Hilbert space.
No, I'm projecting in this region. So I've inserted a slit, which maybe has. There's two ways you can regulate this. So I mean, you can move this down in time if you want, and that will then evolve a little bit with the coupled CFT Hamiltonian that will regulate your state. But there's also just some, you know, artistic epsilon here. But the rejection is in Euclidean space, and this height is just in the drawing.
Okay, I think I understand. Thanks.
Thank you. So in your analysis, you consider post-selection rather than measurement. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So in the open questions, I think you refer to a different setup, bike one and yes. And in their analysis, the setup is different. I mean, they're considering measurement rather than post-selection.
Well, if you want to reconstruct things behind the horizon, then you need to know the measurement outcome to evolve with this modified Hamiltonian to get things out. Otherwise, you'll still get a microstate, but you just won't know what it is.
Okay. And what is the reason you want to consider post-selection rather than measurement? Is it because it's basically difficult to construct a measurement operator in general? Is that the point?
Yeah, part of it is just a function of the thing that I know how to do, which is this post-selection setup onto, I mean, sure, you could do the same thing, but just pretend that you don't know which Cardi state you've selected on. But I mean, I think by the fact that you know what the tension is, you sort of know what the Cardi state is. So that's just a function of the setup, but also I think you do sort of want to know, if I did a measurement and kept the outcome, what could I say about the bulk geometry?
Okay, thank you.
Different, but.
Hi. So,
let me.
Alex,
question from the audience.
Can I give one question from online?
Oh, yes, as well. Sorry.
Okay. Ning, go ahead.
Hi, Brianna. I had a quick question about the usage of the geodesic approximation.
Okay.
So, I'm not one of these people that thinks that the geodesic approximation only holds for analytic spacetime, but were you to How would you address the criticism that the geodesic approximation only holds for analytic spacetimes, both in terms of how it applies to this specific setup and how it affects attempts to generalize your setup to non-analytic spacetime?
Sorry, what was the last part? To non-what?
To non-analytic spacetimes. Because I think there's some concerns by people in the community that the geodesic approximation isn't a good approximation for non-analytic spacetimes. And many of the cases that you would consider would end up having to be non-analytic.
Well, it depends on what you mean. I'm doing everything that I'm doing in this nice space-time that I map to for that reason. So I don't have to worry about the fact that I have diverging structures.
I understand
yes,
that.
It I guess wouldn't work in the original Lorentzian geometry, but that's why I'm not there.
Okay, but I guess my question is, do you see how you would modify this approach in order to make it work in more complicated geometry?
Yeah, so I mean, if my goal is to really understand the original Lorentzian geometry, what you would want to do is actually regularize your measurement. So either by considering a different measurement, something weaker that doesn't destroy large parts of your bulk, or by, so you can do the thing that I just told John, which is evolve, imagine moving a slit here further back in time and then having the pair further in the future and evolving with a coupled Hamiltonian for some amount of time. That regulates your measurement, and then the bulk geometry is less singular. And then presumably you can ask these same questions in that setup.
Thanks.
Good. Okay, maybe Patrick?
Me?
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So in some work with Alex a little while ago, we studied the dynamics in this situation. We weren't really thinking of what we were doing as dynamics after local projective measurements, but I guess That's probably what it was. And so one of the things that seems to happen is this end of the world brain that you have at your initial time slice, it seems to kind of basically go into, like, grow into the bulk and kind of eat up the space time. And I was wondering whether
there's some interpretation for that.
But you
have something boundary anchored that stays boundary anchored, but then just eats up the space time as you
evolve. Just like as a function of, so you prepare your state exactly like this.
Mm-hmm.
And now I evolve the state using the Lorentzian, Hamiltonian. I guess we have a little boundary part as well of the Hamiltonian that we've had to introduce. Okay. But then the brain sort of goes like this.
But with the evolution, you're again letting this part and this part re-entangle?
Well, I mean, so there you've got like this boundary state. You're introducing these two boundaries onto your time slice.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of introducing these new degrees of freedom there,
mm-hmm.
Which I guess are, you know, storing some of the information.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I keep those degrees of freedom there, mm-hmm. in the Lorentzian picture,
yep.
like in order to evolve, I kind of now need to introduce a Hamiltonian to say what happens to those degrees of freedom and how do they interact with the other ones. But I think generically, just from the bulk perspective, you could just model that by adding a boundary term for your, you have your gravity equations in the bulk, and then you just have to add some boundary term and then let the whole thing evolve. But
okay, yeah, what's, is that out? Can I look at it?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can
I'll
talk
take
later,
a look at it, yeah.
It seems like
sure,
interesting
be,
to understand. Yeah. It should have some implication, I think, for this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm, well, I don't understand right now the details of what you just said. I think we were sort of expecting that. Yeah, if you, by measuring, you're disentangling this region and this region, so of course you destroy part of the bulk geometry, and then if you evolve and let them re-entangle, you somehow expect that to grow back and not continue to delete geometry. So I don't understand exactly what's going on in what you just described.
Yeah, no, it seems like kind of the opposite, but maybe there's a way to do it. It'd be interesting to understand.
I'm sure it depends on the details
to do
of
that
what you evolve
re-entangle.
With. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, maybe we have time for one very short last question. I see some raised arm in the back. Sorry.
He's so eager.
Oh, thank you. I'm a little bit confused why the tension is related to the measured state or the choice of measurement basis. Can you explain
it? Yeah, so it makes more sense in, it's elucidated in Swingle subset one. Looking at these tensor network pictures, well, okay, maybe not, maybe actually not so much, but you certainly get more details on that reading this paper, in which case the choice of local projective measurement does affect how deep the analog of this, how much bulk you destroy, and therefore the tension of the end of the world brain that cuts off the bulk, although there's some subtleties with this tensor network picture that, like, you always get a critical tension brain, so they have to do other things to modify that. But it's maybe clearer in that picture.
Yeah, but for example, if you choose the random tensor networks, then
you
cannot distinguish the measurement basis. So.
So they do two things in this paper. One is with a happy tensor, and one is with a random tensor network. In the happy tensor picture, you can choose your measurement basis, keep track of that, and then also see what the what happens in the bulk. And then changing these bases does change what happens in the bulk, up to subtleties.
Thank you.
Very good. I would have asked another question about the theory of Swingle subgroups from your first slide, but unfortunately we're running out of time, so let's thank Brenna again.
Coffee break.